Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
like,
nothing
like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull out the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
You to do worse than Josh Richard.
Don't matter, put the chrome to your bladder, splatter your abs. Pissing in a plastic bag, that's a drag, now you abnormal. The mimic ground the rumble and put some motherfucking stabs on you. The night is young and I'm already fighting, hiding my gun. Promoted bugger screaming, who the fuck invited pun?
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the podcast. I'm your co-host Justin Rosero, coming at you live inside the BTB Man Cave, and joining me as always on this beautiful Monday evening here in mid-May is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Beautiful night tonight here in the Northeast, unlike the unfortunate souls in the Midwest. And we're thinking about you in Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska. That area is not doing hot, unfortunately. It is episode 223 of the Place to Be Podcast, and I hope everyone enjoyed their weekend. And tonight, another kind of like a new thing we've been doing, JR, kind of filling the holes of, you know, this stretch of vaults that we're doing, 1999, because besides the pay-per-views, there have been some pretty iconic non-pay-per-view shows in 1999, and tonight is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let the audience know what we are delving into.
Well, we decided since we were heading towards SummerSlam, and as you said, there were a lot of big Raws in 98, 99, 2000, so we're going to try and pick and choose some to do. And to me, this is probably the biggest one of the year as far as being memorable and major things happening. I mean, Raws, a lot happened on these Raws, but to me, this is one of the iconic ones, and that is the August 9th, 1999 edition from Chicago, Illinois. So this was about 2 weeks before SummerSlam. Was there one more Raw before SummerSlam? That was it, right? One more?
So
2 weeks before.
9th, and then the 16th, and then the... Yeah, 2 weeks before SummerSlam. SummerSlam was the 22nd.
Yep, so here we are, two weeks before SummerSlam. So this was the last live edition of Raw before the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Of course, they would tape the next one the next night, and then head into the Target Center in Minneapolis. So anything you want to talk about the show in general before we get started, Scott?
It's it is probably the... Next to that one in May... that was pretty hot, in which the ratings were record-breaking for USA and for wrestling in general. This is probably one of the most iconic Raws of the Attitude Era in many ways. First off, the crowd. I mean, it's Chicago, so there's no explanation needed. And just so many huge things went on that night. And there were some faults, too, that we'll get into. There were some things I remember about some of the builds that I thought were a little shaky.
And for some reason, I always thought this was in the United Center. I don't know why. I knew it wasn't, but for some reason, I always got confused and thought it was. It was in the Allstate Arena, of course,
yes.
The Rosemont Horizon.
Yeah, their Midwest office. Of course, yeah. United Center still being occupied right. by WCW at this point in 1999. But yes, they were at the Allstate Arena, which is, of course, yes, as JR mentioned, Old Rosemont, which was Vince's little Midwest home away from home. And again, on this night, there was a very special feeling on this night. A lot of stuff going on.
A lot of anticipation, and the word had pretty much leaked out, and it was pretty obvious to anyone paying attention who would be making their debut on this show. And, of course, we had been seeing for weeks now the Millennium Clock had been ticking away, and the shrewd mathematicians could tell that it was not set to expire on December 31st, 1999. No. Was actually set to expire here on August 9th. So we knew something major was going to be going down. In addition to that, we'd have another guest in the house. So a very hyped up episode of Raw, one that a lot of people were looking forward to. And I think at the end, Scott, we should go back and look at what Nitro had up against the show. I think that'll be interesting.
Yes. Yes. In fact, I will. I'll put it up right now. Okay. We'll get to it a little bit later on. But why don't you kick us off? How the show began?
All right. So we open up with the countdown clock, like we mentioned before, and we're 1 hour and 25 minutes away from the clock expiring. So we know that something's going to happen tonight to check in the end of the millennium for us. After the opening animation, we head inside to the sold out Allstate Arena. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are in the booth as always, and the crowd is buzzing as SummerSlam draws near. We open with The Rock, who makes his way out to Humongous Pop. JR tells us The Rock was assaulted by Big Show and Undertaker last night on Heat. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Scott, we're a year into Heat now. Major stuff still happening.
Absolutely. It was taped, I guess, later the previous week. Mm-hmm. Raw was at Joe Louis Arena. And that was a big point for JR because he mentions, of course, that Survivor Series would be in Detroit that November.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there. The Big Show and The Undertaker, who have kind of joined forces, JR, over the past few weeks. Armageddon Show!
Yeah, it was beginning.
I love that combo, by the way. We'll talk more about it as the show progresses, but I'll tell you something. After checking it out again, I really dug that combo.
No, I agree. I like it as well. I liked as Taker kind of being the sick mentor. I think this is the best Big Show has been used since he debuted, where Taker just putting him over as a monster. And even when he fails, Taker puts him over indirectly by basically saying, hey, you failed, but I see more in you. You should be more, and you're just not living up to your potential. So it's kind of one of those angles. So it wasn't like they were really shitting on him. Indirectly, I thought they were really putting him over well with Taker, doing his best to make Show realize that potential. So Rock's not happy with Big Show's actions, and we see Show, Taker, and Paul Bearer all watching backstage on the monitor. Show said he's Rock says he's never been impressed by Show and either of his fans. Rock mocks Show's theme and says all the fans know he sucks so they can go piss during his matches. This is a pretty vintage Rock here, I thought, slaughtering Show from top to bottom. I like when he mocks the chokeslam noise. That finally draws out what is now known as the Unholy Alliance, Big Show and Undertaker, led by Paul Bearer. Rock refuses to run, and he goes right at Show, but the numbers game catches up. X-Pac hits the ring to make the save, goes right at Taker. That's short-lived as well. Now Road Dogg comes out, and he's taken out, and Kane comes out to a monster pop. He clears the ring. The crowd's going bananas. Red-hot promo segment, I thought, all around that made Show and Taker look like beasts as they just beat the piss out of X-Pac, Road Dogg, and The Rock. The theme from DX hits as JR and King run down tonight's docket. We see a limo pull up, and the announcers assume that it could be our big special guest, but it was actually Commissioner Shawn Michaels' unexpected arrival.
Stunning, yes.
Let me take a break there. All right, a few things here. What did you think of Kane's pop?
Huge.
And also X-Pac now, this was his first appearance back from a couple weeks here. He was taken out by Taker the night after Fully Loaded. Of course, X-Pac helped Austin win the first blood match. He came out. So this has been a burgeoning feud going on with X-Pac and Kane and now Taker and Big Show. So X-Pac makes his return here.
Yeah, and they like this weird – the one thing I do like about kind of the way that the mid-card and lower main event card was going, JR, is that they seem to be putting these funny tag teams together. And, again, the alliance of Big Show and Taker, I thought that worked well because Big Show kind of needed – I think he kind of needed to lean on Taker a little bit. And X-Pac and Kane, I mean, we've talked about it throughout 99. X-Pac gave Kane the sense of humanity that I think people started to relate to. And all of a sudden, Taker and Kane are feuding, but a year later, and the roles are reversed, which is pretty neat. So I was very, very happy with this opening segment. Really red hot. And X-Pac and Kane really have step to the fore. DX kind of crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
Really, Road Dogg, who I think came out as well, was really the one left kind of in the limbo of all the DX guys. I thought it would be X-Pac, but really it was Road Dogg. X-Pac found himself something to do at this point. And,
yeah, especially now that the feud of Billy Gunn is done.
Yeah.
Road Dogg really just kind of treading water, although he'll get back into that, as we'll see later on. He gets back into the hardcore mix, so he finds his niche again.
Yeah, he does.
But, yeah, X-Pac and Kane have really become a red-hot act, and I thought this is well-suited. I mean, you know, Kane as a heel made sense the year before, but once we started to really see how well he could emote and act, even with the mask on, mm-hmm. and he started to forge that personal relationship with X-Pac, you really could see why it made sense to have him as a face, because it really just worked well. He was just connected with the fans great. He had a backstory that, well, might not be the most believable. We all kind of, you know, understood it and knew the torture he had been through and was used by Paul Bearer and Undertaker in late 98. Then he was abused by the corporation in China. So now to finally find a friend that doesn't seem to be using him or abusing him for any reason kind of, you know, made people happy to see.
Yeah, and considering that, you know, obviously Taker had taken a very dark path over the past, you know, 8 or 9 months, I think Kane was a very flexible character to do this with. And
yeah.
I think that's the impressive part, is that this was a guy that, because he was so mysterious, you could really go any direction with him. And this was really very creative. So in that aspect, I was very impressed with whether, I don't know if it was Vince, either Vince or any of the other guys, really a great job flipping Kane almost organically in their own way.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think it was organic. I definitely thought it was organic. I thought they did a good job. I don't think it seemed forced at all. I thought the way they slowly had everyone turn on him, like I said, Paul Bearer and Taker used him, and then he kind of got looped into the corporation, and he thought he found a friend in China, and she turned her back on him, and then he finally kind of just started helping out X-Pac, and X-Pac was rejecting him at first because he didn't want the help, and then that kind of fell apart, and they won the tag belt, and from there it's just been a great union. And yeah, it definitely felt good for Kane to see him have a buddy. So when we return from break, Michael Cole catches up with X-Pac, who's now back from his concussion, as we mentioned. Kane looms in the background. X-Pac is here to take care of business, unfinished business, and that starts with he and Kane taking their belts back from the Acolytes tonight, and Taker cannot do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Gangrel versus Christian opens up the show as far as match-wise. Christian has some interesting Brood ripoff music. Did you notice that? I'd never heard that song.
I thought that was kind of weird, too. By the way, speaking of entrance themes, what did you think of shows and Takers?
I liked it.
I love it.
I actually ended up listening to it after I watched that Raw. I went back and just had it on loop for a little bit. It was always one of my favorite. I'll tell you, the Corporation and the Ministry in 99 had some of the best mashups when they did the Corporate Ministry theme and then the Unholy Alliance theme. They were pretty good at mashups back in 99.
Yes.
Before it was
very
all the rage.
Cool. I enjoyed it.
Gangrel had recently turned on Edge, and JR told us that it looked like Christian was going to stay aligned with Gangrel, but instead he turned on him to join his brother. Gangrel gets his usual awesome entrance. Christian attacks off the bell, but Gangrel turns it around and hammers away with some nice aggression. Christian's still wearing the velvet shirt while competing, which to me always was kind of odd looking. Very quick pace as Gangrel uses some high impact offense to offset Christian's attempts to high fly. After a few counters, Christian snaps off a tornado DDT, follows out with an inverted DDT, but before he can get the impaler, the Hardy Boys show up. Drawing Christian over. Christian wipes both of them out on the floor as JR and King try and figure out what's going on. Back inside, Christian gets sprayed in the eyes with mist, and Gangrel plants him with the, well, I guess it was blood mist. Gangrel plants him with the implant DDT for the win. The Hardys hop in the ring and stomp away until Edge makes a save. That ends quickly after an implant DDT from Gangrel, and then Gangrel, the Hardys triple team Edge and Christian. Michael Hayes comes out, and he breaks things up and chastises the Hardys, and as he starts to leave, they turn on their mentor and leave him wiped out with a Jeff Hardy senton bomb off the top rope. Gangrel joins the fray until they decide to end the carnage, and it looks like now we have a new form of the Brood, as we'll find out, and that is the Hardy Boys aligned with Gangrel, and Edge and Christian are now faced. So we have now split, basically reverse roles, Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys, and Michael Hayes is now written off. Did you think it was too soon that they wrote Michael Hayes off?
I think he was collateral damage of switching the Hardys and Edge and Christian.
Obviously, my question is, you think they needed to turn the Hardys and dump Michael Hayes? I mean, obviously, that's why they dumped him. But
yeah, I hate to say it, I think so, because I think they needed a team with Gangrel, and there was really no other that would fit properly.
Why did they need a team with Gangrel?
I don't know, because I think they felt that Gangrel was viable. still, and him being by himself, it, obviously, if they loved him that much, he would have stayed by himself. So maybe he liked having, like, muscle. Well, I don't know, muscle, I guess, a Hardy's. Like, it's true to say.
I know. I mean, they really made it like he was tutoring them. But I didn't think it was totally necessary.
I mean, I liked Michael Hayes with the cane and everything, but unfortunately, I think if they were going to – I think Gangrel needed, you know, guys with him. And
I mean, I don't think he did, but you know, I think the Hayes thing had worn a little thin, so it wasn't that upsetting to me, but I don't think you needed to have – I never thought the Hardys fit with Gangrel. I thought it seemed forced, like the new brood. We just had the brood. It wasn't even around that long. Now we're already at the new brood, and you just have these two young high flyer guys. They didn't even do anything to make it. I mean, unless I'm just forgetting, they did it after, but it didn't seem right. Like they even did anything like to make it like they were brainwashed or it was cult lit. Like, they don't really explain it. All of a sudden, they're just dark and they have their hair wet and they wear red and black. I don't know. It was just kind of odd. They didn't really.
Right.
They should have done some skits where like Gangrel brainwashed them or something and to make them turn on Hayes. It was just kind of odd. That's all. It just seemed. Like, they didn't really put much behind it. They just had him turn, go heel, and then flip back.
Yeah.
And it was odd, too, because I thought Edge and Christian at the time fit better as heels because they weren't really great talkers. And, I mean, neither were the Hardys, but the Hardys were kind of the young – I mean, I guess Edge and Christian were, too. But the Hardys, to me, were more of, like, the old rocker-style tag team that seemed better suited to be faces here, especially with Hayes talking for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I just – I think they just really felt that – that Gangrel needed, they did force it a little, but I think their whole point was Gangrel is a mentor to young, you know, hungry stalwarts, and the Hardys were the next in line. Whether that makes sense or not, I don't know, but I think that's what they were going for, and to do that, Michael Hayes just didn't fit anymore.
I guess it just seemed rushed to me. I thought we had.
It probably was. It probably was.
I mean,
we're also looking at it from only one side. I think the other side of it was, I think Edge and Christian were due for their own time to break out and be themselves.
I don't even know if it was time for that yet.
You think so?
I don't know. I mean, I guess in hindsight, we see what comes 2 months later, but I don't know. I just see like a change for the sake of change, I guess, because they don't really do much with them character-wise for a while. And then even the new brood itself doesn't last that long. So it just seemed like a change for the sake of a change. We're probably spending more than enough time on it, but I just thought it felt a little bit kind of forced and hackneyed to, well, now we got the new brood, and the Hardys are going to act like Edge and Christian were. I don't know. This seemed weird. It seemed like there was a reason behind it. That's all.
Yeah, no, it did seem a little forced. I'm just saying that. I think that's the philosophy they were going with, and I don't know if it was meant totally for Gangrel or if it was meant for somebody to...
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think... I don't agree with that assessment that Gangrel had to have a team. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not like he was a manager. I mean, he was an actual wrestler. I don't see why. I mean, I like the stable idea, but I don't think, like, it was imperative that he had one.
Probably not. At this point, do you even feel like Gangrel fits anymore? You almost feel like he might be kind of being lapped.
I just think he was never really pushed right. I think he fit. I think he kind of fit the attitude look and the spit in the blood and the I don't know. I think he did. I do. I just think they never really established him as any kind of threat besides the bloodbath stuff, you know? He hung out in the ministry for a while.
So you think in essence he was just a sideshow act?
He just didn't seem to do much.
Right.
Like, his guys didn't really do anything. They just kind of were there. There was no reason to believe he was like a worthy or a good manager of any sort or a good running buddy. And I think he could have been. I don't think he was. I think he could have been used better. They just didn't seem to ever get behind him enough. And as we'll see as 99 ends, they start getting more and more talent and guys like him start to fall by the wayside. And we'll see that with a bunch of guys towards the end of 99. Guys that were mid-card stalwarts for a lot of 98 and early 99 that all of a sudden start to fall off because they... this influx of talent doesn't allow for them to really get a push. All right, so we go backstage. Michael Cole's with the Acolytes, and they officially accept Kane and X-Pac's title challenge. So we'll see that later tonight. Now we head elsewhere, where Jesse Ventura has arrived in the arena, and he's coming up next. Yes, the body's back.
Yes.
He had last been seen on TV when we did the last review, pretty much, the Saturday Night's Main Event, and then he was on Superstars a couple more times. It had been 9 years since the body had been on WWF television. Of course, he won the election to become the governor of Minnesota in November of 1998. Mm-hmm. WWF kind of propped him up, and they played it up, and I don't want to say they took credit for it, but they definitely ran with it a little bit back in the end of 98.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, they that you talk about movies we should review. Next time you're in, Scott, we should do that Jesse Ventura movie. I think we have that on tape somewhere, don't we?
Orson Welles is a... is this commentator on Nitro?
Oh, that awful, awful, awful
terrible
TV movie. Just brutal. Terrible.
The military and political part of that movie wasn't bad for what it was, but them trying to do the wrestling was just unwatchable.
I'll tell you, that was one of the negatives of this time period with wrestling being huge in the mainstream, is that these movies, you know, we talked about it with Kevin last week with the friggin' Secrets of Pro Wrestling, and then this this awful, awful made-for-TV movie. Mm-hmm. Not good. So anyway... they decided to, with going to Minnesota for SummerSlam, breaking in the Target Center, they figured they would bring Jesse in for some publicity. And, of course, there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of consternation with the body here and his advisors. Originally, they didn't want him to be on at all. They didn't want to be him being associated with wrestling, which, while it was starting to gain some mainstream level of acceptance, it was still looked at, especially like by advertisers and politicians, as trashy. So they didn't know how they wanted him involved. He basically said, fuck you, I'll do what I want. And then for a little while, it looked like he wasn't going to be able to get physically involved at all. And then they pull the reins back on that. We'll talk about that later this week. But anyway, so he reached an agreement to come back and he would appear on this one Raw. And then at SummerSlam, he'd act as a special guest referee, just like he did way back at the first SummerSlam in 1988. He would referee the main event. So before we get to the segment, Scott, what was your reaction? I mean, obviously a positive one, but what did you think when the body agreed to come back?
Oh, I was beyond ecstatic. I remember, you know, I was in radio and in news radio, and I remember working election night, and we weren't paying attention to many national races. It was the midterm election for Bill Clinton's second term, I remember. So there's a lot of Senate races and congressional races and things like that. But I remember coming home that night. I worked late, and I got home, God, like 1:30, quarter to 2, and CNN and Fox and all these networks were saying Jesse the Body Ventura is going to be the governor of Minnesota. I remember the candidates was Norm Coleman was the Republican. I don't remember who the Democrat was. And Jesse was the whatever the name of the party was.
He was independent, wasn't he?
He was an independent, but the party itself had a specific name. I don't remember what it was. Freedom Party or something like that.
Actually, when I registered to vote when I turned 18, it was right after he won the election, so I registered as independent because Jesse did it. Reform Party Minnesota later joined the independents.
Yeah, Reform Party, that's it. But yeah, technically, I mean, yes, for all intents and purposes, he was an independent. Yeah. But I mean, I know he had a specific name, but I was like, oh my God, a wrestler made good.
Yeah, he defeated Norm Coleman and Hubert Skip Humphrey III.
Oh, Hubert's, that's his grandson or something. Yep. That's right. Norm Coleman was Republican. Humphrey was a Democrat. That's right. Yep. So I was surprised. I'm thinking, wow, he really wanted to? Because obviously, I mean, it's been 9 years since Vince, you know, since what happened in 1990. So I was a little puzzled, but ecstatic, being selfish as a wrestling fan. Very excited. Because in a time right now where the world title is I don't want to say not taken seriously, but a little more of a prop than anything else.
Mm.
We all know Jesse would take the title very seriously.
Yep.
And that's all I was looking forward to. So I was very ecstatic, absolutely ecstatic.
And of course, Jesse would only serve one term. He decided against re-election in 2002. And he stated that if he was single, he would have gone for it. But it took a toll on his family between the media attention and how busy he was. He didn't want to do that again. Of course, there's always been rumors that he's going to run for president. We heard it in 2008, 2012 again. And there are rumors out there that he may run on the Libertarian ticket in 2016. Maybe Mark Clare can shed some information on that.
Interesting.
But I guess they're saying he was more interested in 2016 than he was in 2012. I mean, I didn't even know if he was even in the country anymore. Didn't he leave the country? I know he's nuts now. He's like a conspiracy guy and all.
Yeah, he's kind of a lunatic, but...
Yeah. Him and Joe Dombrowski.
Yes. I don't know. Does he live in Canada? No, I'm not sure.
Maybe he just threatened to move and he hasn't. Mm. I know he went off the grid in like Tim Thomas style there for a while.
Yes. He was in the woods with a rifle or something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He lives in Cabo St. Lucas, Mexico, and Delwood, Minnesota, splits his time.
Two very unusual places together.
So anyway, he was definitely in the headlines big time in this stretch.
Yes.
Had reentered the consciousness of America and of wrestling fans, and it was announced a big deal here. I thought it was really cool to see him back. And like you said, he added a lot of legitimacy right off the bat. And just, God, just seeing him do the show just made me wish he could have came back, or, you know, then or today, back in the booth, because he was just phenomenal. So after we take a break, Lawler's in the ring. He brings out Governor Ventura, who gets a very warm welcome.
Oh, with the iconic theme song.
Yeah, this was epic at the time. It really was a big deal seeing him come out. For them to get an active politician, a guy that's... And you can't even just say he was a guy that was like a lifelong WDF guy, and it was easy to get. I mean, this is a tough get, because they had so many personal issues in the past. And for him to come back, to forgive Vince enough to come back and put their issues aside, and being a governor, and not just any governor, a guy that had a lot of mainstream eyes on him at the time, was a pretty big get for the WDF at SummerSlam. So he announces he'll be the guest referee for the main event. Lawler gives Ventura the open forum to speak his mind. Mm-hmm. He talks about missing wrestling and his time in politics. He gives his resume as a referee to the fans. For those who don't know it, of course, talks about why he was chosen. Talks about SummerSlam 88 and the time he was brought in to referee that match.
Talks about the Navy SEALs a lot, too.
Yeah, he rags on the wannabe SEALs that ran off like cowards and played in hippie rock bands when it came time to defend their country. yes. He gets a dig at a recent TV movie about his life, which is awesome. Says people pretend to be SEALs and bad acted made for TV movies with Bozo the Clown haircuts. Which is pretty dead on accurate, I thought.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
He's the real deal when it comes to wrestling and the SEALs. He drops the SEALs' names and other facts, and he says he'll be refereeing SummerSlam in Minnesota, where the body is power. He says the only person that could deliver law and order and decide the champion in the middle of the ring in Minnesota will be him. He guarantees that the best wrestler will be the champion. King, the best wrestler. The match will be between Steve Austin and Triple H. And as proof of his power, he says, you don't see that scumbag Vince McMahon around here anymore, do you? I got a nice pop. So he basically takes credit for that, running Vince off. And as we mentioned it, fully loaded, Vince was forced off out of the company when Undertaker lost that match, and he has not been on since in the couple weeks since. Actually, he was on the next night, gave his farewell, and then he's been gone since then. So at this point, what did you think of the promo, Scott?
Oh, I thought the promo was tremendous.
I mean, he hadn't missed a beat, right?
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. Scumbag Vince McMahon.
The best wrestler will win.
Yeah. And once again, he called it the WWF Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. Just hearing him say it just gives you tingles, because second biggest show of the year, and there he is. And did you feel like Austin was, as champion, was kind of put in the background a little bit?
Yep. Yeah, I was going to talk about that, too. I felt that Austin, I don't know if it was a byproduct of Vince leaving or just the kind of the other influx of talent and The Rock kind of climbing the ladder and other stuff going on. He did feel like a little bit of an afterthought. It felt like almost they were getting bored with him a little bit. Like they were kind of running out of ideas. Without him chasing Vince, it felt like they were almost running out of ideas of what to do with him, kind of.
Exactly. And then obviously the rumors were kind of circulating at this time that he needed something done with his neck.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that, obviously.
It's almost like they really just weren't, they didn't know how to book him without putting him against Vince. I mean, they haven't had to in a long time. He's out of the feuds, but they've all been circled around or centered around Vince in the mix, too. So, kind of a tough spot for them all of a sudden. Like, wow, he's been involved with Vince since he turned into a megastar in late 97. Now, all of a sudden, we don't know what to do with him. We don't know how to use him. Just in a regular feud, not rebelling against the boss. So, interesting stuff. Like, but yeah, I agree. I thought having Jesse back was a huge boon.
And of course, you know what that means.
Of course,
this is the first time ever that we. This is the first time ever we actually had a chase to see who would play a theme first, because I had something else to play, but I could save it till after.
Okay.
Because this promo obviously continues, because we are joined by the current number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation Championship, and that is of course Triple H, not yet I don't think not quite called the game yet.
Yeah, it kind of starts here. It's kind of because I think he had already referred to himself as that in that interview with Jim Ross. So, I mean, not full-time called that, but...
He didn't say it in this promo. I don't think he said it in this promo. I don't think.
What? Sorry, I'm seeing with Paul Heyman's introduction of his newest member of his... What the fuck name is that? Sorry. I'm not going to spoil it for you because I know you're going to watch.
No, I'll be writing it up later. So.
Quite interesting, though.
Okay.
Anyway... So we are back here in 1999. I don't think he was completely the game yet.
No,
fully on, but he was definitely
The promo was a little. I got to be honest. The promo was a little clumsy. A little.
Yeah.
Hadn't quite got his confidence down yet. I don't think.
No, it was building though, and in a way, I thought it played well that he wasn't polished because he was so angry. And so pissed off and so focused that it was like clouding his ability to do anything. He was so fucking angry at everything. And I thought he was doing a good job here. And of course, as CRZ, the great CRZ would say, the sound of dying seagulls fills the arena at the beginning of Triple H's theme music. So him and Chyna coolly saunter down to the ring. Ventura warns Hunter to work on his wrestling because only the best wrestler will win the match. It is Jesse's way or the highway. Hunter tells Jesse that he is stuck in the 70s and all his past accomplishments. As well, or in the past, crowd is all over Hunter. This is his world and his ring. Jesse says this is his country, which is bigger than this ring. Good showdown here. It felt like a lot of star power, you know, with Jesse and Triple H was really kind of stood out with him. Mm-hmm. I liked when Jesse uses tell him he's gonna be disappointed, King, or whatever he said to him. it was funny to see him interact with Lawler. Hunter tells Jesse he's stuck in the 70s with all his past accomplishments. Crowd is all over Hunter here. This is his world, his ring, like we said. Yep. Jesse brags about his picture being with Bill Clinton that graced all the major newspapers today. Hunter's on fire here, shitting on Jesse and his accomplishments. He says if he wants to kick Ventura's ass, he will. Before things can escalate, the commissioner emerges and struts down the ramp. JR wonders why Sean's in the building. He reminds Hunter that Jesse has standards and practices to abide by, but he does not. So come SummerSlam, Jesse with the most powerful referee in WWF history. Hunter may think it's his world, but Michaels is the one that brought him into this world. Sean threatens to knock the glare off Hunter's face, but Hunter shoves him away. Jesse steps between them. Sean wants to fight. Jesse whispers in his ear and calms him down, and then grabs the mic and says, "This is politics, King." Sean says Jesse reminded him of all the stroke that they both possess, so they don't need to get physical. Instead, Hunter will face Austin and Undertaker in a triple threat match and here tonight. I thought this was an awesome segment. Great mic work by all three. I thought Lawler was a good job moderating it. And then we see Austin walking backstage as we take a break.
Yes.
Okay. Thoughts on the Hunter part of it?
I will agree with you that he definitely added something to the promo because he needed to get himself established. He needed to legitimize himself. This is, you know, at the moment it's Austin Triple H, and you're dealing with the big dog in the yard. No pun intended to Undertaker. And you've only been, you know, this big nasty heel for like 4 months. So I thought it was very important for him to come out and establish himself with Jesse and realize, you know, I am part of this match, whether you like it or not. That's the best part. Like we've been talking over the last couple of vaults about, and we asked Kevin about whether Triple H was forced down our throats. I almost think that was part of the storyline. To a certain extent. Like, Triple H is pretty much saying, you know what, I'm here, you don't like it, tough shit. It's my time, my championship match, my shot at the gold, fuck you if you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost think that the whole shove down your throat was part of the story. I almost think it was part of the story. That, yeah, it's my time, you don't like me, I don't give a fuck whether you like me or not. It's my time, my match, my shot at SummerSlam, and I'm taking it.
Yes
and
no.
The title.
Yes and no. I think at the time, I don't think we can deny it now. And I know Kevin kind of said it, and I know you've said it here too, that no, it wasn't pushed down his throat, and it was a gimmick, and we didn't feel that way. We need to build a new star. But at the time, the thought and the feeling in wrestling was strong, very strong, that he was being pushed fast, hard, and down all over. And we'll see as SmackDown debuts later the next month, or later this month, debuted in August, right?
Mm-hmm.
As SmackDown debuted, the push would go into hyperdrive. He'd be all over that show, and he'd start to be all over Raw as well. And I think Yes, they did rush him a little bit, but you know they needed to. They needed heel stars. They needed them bad. And sometimes you gotta take the short term shoving down the throat and short term bullet to get a guy over. And they did. They pushed him hard and they pushed him right to the moon. And well, as much as you could in '99 with all the friggin' short matches and quick jobs, but
yeah, exactly.
They definitely did a good job with getting him over as much as they could and not backing off and not starting stopping and just making him legitimized.
Yes. But of course, but I think it was fine. I think it was fine. Again, his promo was very angrily clumsy, but I think it was meant to be that way. You're right. I think that was the whole crux.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse was great. And
yeah,
and
I do
King.
Like that. I mean, look, none of this, what I'm saying, is any of Hunter's fault. Like, I thought he took the ball and he ran with it. And it's not mm-hmm. his fault if he was all over TV. I mean, it just wasn't. And
right.
he was doing a good job in the ring. He was doing a good job with his angry promos. He was working hard and trying to finally get to that spot he's always wanted to be. So I won't blame him. He did a great job with all this.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't agree with the fact that he wasn't a little bit overdone with this push. Maybe
right.
less is more could have maybe worked a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. However, you know what we'll never have less of and what we'll always take more of? The iconic
yes.
Jesse theme. Had to play a little bit of it.
And of course...
we don't hear it enough.
Always loved
it. Did he use it when he... He didn't use it when he came back in as Raw guest host, did he?
No, I don't think
didn't
so.
Didn't he use something else and we got really disappointed?
I think so. I don't remember for sure. I do remember when I went to Vegas for the first time in 2006, one of the elevators in the Monte Carlo, they play ads in the elevators with little TV screens, and that was one of the songs in one of the promos. So I love going in the elevator just to hear the Jesse theme over and over.
That is awesome.
All right, so we take a break. When we return,
and everyone's probably like, why is this guy humming this into his commercial?
And why is he yelling like Jesse Ventura? So when we return, we see footage from earlier today where D'Lo Brown is helping Mark Henry working out, running through a park, trying to get Mark Henry in shape. Henry keeps bitching about having to take a piss. So Henry finally leaves, goes and takes one in the woods. The car pulls up. Jeff Jarrett jumps out and beats up D'Lo Brown. He whips him into a tree, bashes him into a trash can. Deborah keeps yelling at him to get back in the car. He does. They speed off. And we cut back to the arena. So I thought it was a cool little use of outside area, outside setting. What did you think of the part about Deborah like screaming at Jarrett, though? It's almost like she didn't want him to do it.
Well, she didn't want him to do it. She's like, Jeff, stop it, Jeff. Yeah. Get in the car, Jeff. And, you know, that's where the irony comes in of, well, you know, Mark Henry going to take a piss, and then all of a sudden D'Lo's alone and gets beat up, and, you know. We'd see what would happen down the line with that. But I like the feud. It was a good mid-card feud, two guys, and we'll talk more about them when we get to SummerSlam. But I had no problem with it. It did sound like she was trying to stop him because Deborah was now kind of like the frustrated tweener. She hadn't totally turned face, but she was like the frustrated tweener at this point. She was a heel through 98 into the beginning of 99, but as soon as she liked the fact that fans liked her feminine wiles, she was, of course, tweening out a little bit. So,
and Jarrett was being a dick.
Yes, he was, big time.
And that was great. He was really picking on Deborah and blaming her for a lot of his troubles lately. So I think that was part of rebelling as well. So we head back to the arena. We see Jeff Jarrett taking on Val Venus. At SummerSlam, D'Lo Brown's newly won IC and European titles will be on the line against Jarrett. We saw D'Lo win that. He was already European champion, of course, when he defeated Midian. And then he wins the IC title over Jeff Jarrett on Raw. Was it the week before the show or the night after Fully Loaded? I forget.
Oh, I don't remember either.
Let's see here.
2 weeks after Fully Loaded?
It was August 2nd.
So 2 weeks after
Fully Loaded. Yeah, 2 weeks after he won.
Yep.
All right. So we have, yes, D'Lo is a dual champion defending against Jarrett at SummerSlam. Deborah leads out here, and she is not shy about showing off her goods at all.
No, not at all.
Double J cost Val a shot at Brown's IC strap the night before because he wanted the shot against D'Lo for both titles. Jarrett's been blaming all his problems on Deborah, which doesn't go over well with JR and the King. Jarrett attacks before Val can do his usual double entendre. JR tells us there's some sort of commotion going down backstage. Val turns the tide with a spine buster as a crowd chants for puppies. JR keeps giving sketchy details on the backstage skirmish, so now we found out that it happened in a stairwell, not a locker room. Deborah's interference backfires, allowing Val to hit a powerbomb for the win. Jarrett is again pissed at Deborah, blaming her for the loss. Val comes back and wipes out Jarrett to stop the bitching. Jarrett's ranting, and then we cut to the stairwell to see Steve Austin's been wiped out and is being attended to by Michaels and the officials, and we cut to break. I like when some of the officials are like saying, was it... what did they say? Was it a mistake? And like Sean like snaps at them, and he's like, "What do you think? He fell down or tripped down the stairs?" Do you remember what he said? It was something really funny. I wish I made note of it.
Oh, what was it? I don't remember what Sean said. I remember what Jesse and JR and King said later on in the night, but no, I don't remember now. Yeah, do you think he fell on purpose, or why would he fall down the stairs?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But later on in the night, Jesse and
we'll get to that.
JR see something really funny, though.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Slam of the Week takes us back to Test defeating Rodney as he ran the Mean Street Posse gauntlet here, trying to attempt to get to Shane McMahon. Test won, leaving just Joey Abs now standing in his way. Mm-hmm. Cole rejoins us. We see Austin is unconscious, and he's loaded into an ambulance. Cole confirms that he believes this is some sort of attack, as there's a broken cinder block by Austin's head. Hunter and China show up, and Hunter asks what happened. Sean shuts that down quickly and vows Hunter will not get off easy with this one. He goes back to the arena. Michaels jogs to the ring. He says he pins the assault completely on Hunter and calls him out to the ring. Hunter finally shows up and tries to play dumb, but Sean wants none of it. Sean says he may have taught Hunter everything he knows, but he's still the teacher. Hunter still has to wrestle tonight in a False Count Anywhere triple threat match, and now the SummerSlam title shot will be on the line.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Hunter says he earned that match, and Sean can do whatever. But Sean says he can do whatever he pleases. Sean's going to take the referee. Sean is going to referee the match as well. Hunter wants to know who'll be in the ring along with him and Taker. Sean wonders aloud who could possibly take Austin's spot in this match. He wants someone that's been living in the shadow for so long to do anything to go to SummerSlam and challenge for the title. Sean then reveals that Hunter and Taker will wrestle China tonight.
What?
Hunter laughs that off and says China's just a girl and that she could get hurt and this is serious man's business. China didn't like that at all. She grabs the mic and accepts the opportunity.
Thank you, Commissioner Michaels.
China walks off, and there seems to be trouble, or thunder, as you will, in paradise. No way.
Who's Brew?
Was to be seen, though.
Yes. There's no Brew on this show. This is where I was starting to get a little annoyed. Now you're only 2 weeks away from WrestleMania. Now this whole thing is – now you're starting to convolute the match. I wasn't really
SummerSlam,
crazy about
WrestleMania.
That. I mean SummerSlam.
Well,
we'll
save that part for the end.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I want to get into that. In detail, but what did you think of it being China using that here?
All right, I'll admit it was a good turn, it was a good twist because you didn't expect that coming, and I think people wanted, in a weird way, by this point, I think people wanted to cheer China in a kind of an odd way. So I think Sean knew that, and I think that's why he probably said, "Well, why don't we try this?" And I don't know if that was his say, but I think it added some intrigue, and again, I think the fans wanted to cheer her, so I thought it was a smart move. Made Triple H look like a bigger dick, which was the whole point. So, yeah, I liked it. Did you?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a good way to get under Triple H's skin. And then, of course, immediately as well, made things very awkward with him and China. Because I think he knew how Hunter would react to China being involved in the match. It was good. It was good needling, good prodding from Sean.
Yes, I agree. Didn't see him at all.
No.
Is he on the show? I don't think he was on, right?
No, he's off TV, remember?
That's right. He was off.
We just talked about that.
We can't hear you. I thought maybe he was... I know that he was in the middle of the exile, but...
Yes.
So, we can't hear you.
All right. Anyway. We come back from break, and China's telling Hunter off backstage. Hunter tries to make excuses for what he said, but it's too late. China's taking the opportunity, and the match is officially on. Next up, we have our big tag title match. Kane and X-Pac versus the Acolytes. Kane and X-Pac debut their combined entrance here, showing off the camaraderie, where they have the pyro go, Kane's song starts, and then it cuts to the DX theme.
This was the big rumor that Kane was going to come out in green.
Yes.
This is when it really was strong. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when it seemed like they were starting to do the combined stuff. So.
Yeah. That would have been cool.
Of course I would have
enjoyed that. By the way, the best part, earlier in the show, the Acolytes promo, when... Who's that? When Bradshaw calls him a chinchilla.
To get the juices flowing.
Yeah. When Bradshaw calls X-Pac a chinchilla, or a chihuahua.
Yeah, chihuahua.
He calls him a chihuahua. That was pretty funny.
All right. Match opens. Yep. As a brawl, both in and out of the ring, Kane shows lots of fire here, clubbing Bradshaw in the corner. JR talks about how Pac has helped Kane come out of his shell. The champs double team to momentarily grab control, but Kane kicks his way free and tags in X-Pac. He flies around before Farooq kills him with a spine buster, one of my favorite moves. X-Pac tries to battle back, but Bradshaw plants him with a powerbomb. JR tells us that Austin's still unconscious. The champs quick tag in and out, using their power to keep X-Pac grounded. X-Pac's finally able to slip free and make the hot tag. Kane flies in with a clothesline off the top. He fends off both men, rocking them with a double clothesline, but Bradshaw is eventually able to push him over the top rope. Champs go for the double powerbomb, but Kane yanks Bradshaw out of the ring, allowing Pac to wiggle real free and drop Farooq with the X-Factor for the win. We have new tag team champions. And now, Scott, when we left off, had the Acolytes already won the belts back?
Yes. Didn't they have the titles at, titles at Fully Loaded?
Let me just double check quick.
Anyway,
what did you think of the match while I'm looking this up?
It was very entertaining. Crowd was hot. And I liked the, very unique dichotomy between, like little guy X-Pac, Big Kane and him going along with, pretty sure it's X-Pac takes a vicious clothesline from hell from Bradshaw. I mean, like he gets crushed. But a good match, and crowd was red hot. And you felt that this show needed at least one title change.
Yeah, definitely.
And obviously this was the easiest belt to do that with. So new, once again, World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, X-Kane.
Yeah, the Acolytes won them at Fully Loaded.
Okay, it was at Fully Loaded. So they had it. So they've had it for, 3 weeks?
Yes,
but that was the average length of title.
Yeah, that was a good reign for this time. But I liked it.
3 weeks in 1999 is like fucking Bruno's reign. So, but good match. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I thought it was a good. I thought it was a good title change. I thought it was well done, and you needed to get the belts. I thought on X-Pac and Kane here. I thought it was the way they were, how over they were, and the Acolytes didn't really need them. I mean, honestly, they could get them back anytime if they needed to. But I thought this set up a nice tag title match for SummerSlam. Which we'll see.
They
crowds
got pushed up afterwards, didn't they?
Huh?
They were left lying in the ring after they won.
Well, we're not done yet. Hang on.
Oh.
Crowd loves that finish.
Yes.
Road Dogg comes out to celebrate. X-Pac with the big moment gets Kane to say suck it without the voice assistance tool, which is really cool. So this is great moments here. This is a very well-crafted storyline.
Yes.
The excitement to hear Kane finally speak without the voice box and for them to win the gold. Kane was really just becoming human. I thought it was nice. Crowd goes nuts when Kane speaks. Sho and the Taker hit the ring and beat down the new champs. They wipe out Road Dogg, target X-Pac's neck, and then double team Kane and they walk out. Mm-hmm. So there, you're happy? We covered it.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Fine. Everything's good.
After commercial, JR takes us to footage of GTV, which we talked about with Kevin a couple other times. Mm-hmm. We see Mr. Ass getting a massage. He asks for the masseuse to put some herbs on Mr. Ass's ass. She puts gloves on first, which leads Ass to question what's up, but she claims calms him down by stroking his ego, and the application goes down as we fade to the arena.
Yes. Right. Very strange.
Yes. Anything to do with Mr. Ass's ass is strange.
Yes.
All right. So up next, we have a tag match, which is basically the final leg of the gauntlet here, with Test against the Mean Street Posse trying to get his hands on Shane so he can finally date Stephanie in peace, which, of course, we saw was part of Test's request from... Vince McMahon.
CEO Austin. Yes.
Oh, no, that's right. I'm sorry. It's from Steve Austin.
CEO Austin, yep. For the union. The union guys.
And here we have Test teaming with Ken Shamrock. And now, Scott, we can hit that music. Blackman has been an awesome
guy. I do love the fake out the... But the song's not really starting yet.
And Blackman teaming up with Joey Abs.
I like to hear that in a commercial.
This is two separate feuds going on here. Of course, Blackman and Shamrock still warring since their match at Fully Loaded out in the parking lot. And then Joey Abs and Test, of course, as we mentioned. So the final leg of the gauntlet's here. Shane leads Joey to the ring. I love the Mean Street Posse theme song. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Tag match kind of blends the feuds together, like we said. Last week, Shamrock assaulted Blackman with a chain. JR tells us how the Mean Street Posse has been put on the shelf due to attacks from Test. We saw Pete Gas beaten down, and he had ribs broken 2 weeks ago. And last week, Test busted Rodney's arm and shoulder. Shamrock's locked in. The match kicks off as he slides in the ring. Shamrock wrecks Joey Abs out of the ring until Blackman makes a save. Shane leaves the booth and jumps Test, and he returns right back and starts commentating again. Test recovers and wipes out Joey Abs with a big boot and neck breaker. Shane pops up to distract Test, allowing Abs to get some offense in. He gets a suplex for two. Blackman and Shamrock is pretty much brawling on the floor this whole time. In the ring, Test has a gut-wrench powerbomb. Shane grabs a chair, but Shamrock whips his kendo stick into it, driving the steel into Shane's mug, knocking him down. Test nails a pump handle slam and gets the win. Shane's back up, and he scampers backstage as Test busts Joey's ankle, breaking out the vintage Pillmanizer. Test does it twice, and there's no one left standing to protect Shane from Test. As we head to break, we see Rock walking backstage. What did you think of this? Did you think it made Test look too mean-spirited?
No, not at all. Shane was a douche. And
it was okay,
though,
but it just seemed it seemed a little heel-like to have him, I don't know, like, viciously destroy these guys. Like I said, just beat them and get them out of the way. He's, like, breaking their bones and Pillmanizing his leg twice and everything else. I mean, I guess.
I mean, it might have gone a little bit overboard.
Kind of made him seem like an asshole.
Yeah, I don't think anybody liked him anyways.
He's trying to date a girl, you know?
I don't know if it really mattered, but...
Murder these
yeah,
guys?
They might have. I mean, he might have gone a little overboard. I mean, I don't know if it was meant to really put over the feud and be like, you know what, this is what's going to happen to you, Shane. There's almost like a message. This is what's going to happen to you, Shane, kind of thing. So I think he was trying to make a point, but it was
no,
pretty...
No, I get it. I'm just saying.
It was pretty strong.
Looked like an a-hole. After the commercial, Cole is with Test. Test just wants to be left alone with Steph, but Shane and the posse would not listen, and now they're all banged up. And that only leaves Shane. After this was a pretty good passionate promo from Test. Really, really the best he's looked since he debuted. Now we get the iconic promo from Steve Blacko, one of my favorite all-time promos. He's calling out Ken Shamrock, but instead of looking at the camera, he's looking at Terry Taylor, who's interviewing him. He's like pointing at Terry Taylor's face, yelling at Ken Shamrock. I have no idea how Taylor kept a straight face here. I don't get it. This is just up there with one of my... anyone who has not seen this promo needs to find it, because it is just phenomenal. He's just yelling, right? He's not even looking near the camera, just screaming at Terry Taylor. Blackman wants a weapons cage match with Shamrock so they can finally end this feud. And as we'll see, that would happen at SummerSlam.
Yes. For those that are interested, you can see this entire episode is on Daily Motion if you can find it. So
yeah,
not on
parts.
YouTube. Pieces, on
yeah,
YouTube.
Pieces on YouTube, but all three parts are on Daily Motion.
Yes.
All right, back inside the arena, Rock marches to the ring. JR notes that it's WWF week on MTV. Rock calls out Big Show for a match since he's free to compete for the night. As the Rock is talking, the Millennium Clock flashes on the Titantron and counts down to zero. The crowd's already buzzing and chanting loudly as the lights flash on and off. The arena goes dark, pyro goes off, and the words... What do you say we take a break, Scott?
Yeah, I think a break's pretty good right now.
I think we take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into it.
We are on break. Because?
There seems to be a mental patient loose in the hospital.
Where are my medical records? I'm going to Florida.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Oh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harvard Chat are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon.
at historyofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor of the show, the Wrestling Forum, TWFnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation. Many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours can be included at the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out. Find out what they're about at TWFnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com. My good friend Mike, it's a great online radio station. Not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Jericho appear on the screen. The awesome theme music makes its debut, as you hear there. I like this version of the song. It's a little bit slower and a little bit different. The man himself makes an appearance on the ramp to an ear-splitting pop. The crowd is going fucking berserk. Of course, this is the debut of the one and only Chris Jericho.
Yes,
from WCW. Why don't we save his bio for SummerSlam, though, Scott?
Oh, yeah. No,
or actually, I guess Unforgiven, right? It'll be his official bio.
Unforgiven, yeah. So okay, we'll save his bio for a couple shows. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Immediately looks like a big star, though. I thought he looked like a mega star here, cutting off the Rock to a massive pop. Music is blaring. The arena's going crazy. He says he's the millennium of the WWF. He officially introduces himself to the fans, the dawning of a new era. Fans are kind of split now. Some are chanting for the Rock, some are behind Jericho. Jericho claims the WWF needs a new era as the program has deteriorated to a cliched, boring snooze fest. He's here to save the WWF. TV ratings are spiraling downward. Pay-per-view buy rates are plummeting. Mainstream acceptance is non-existent. And live crowds are silent. Of course, the crowd here is going bananas, which makes the claims so much better. He knows the fans are embarrassed to even be in the arena. Jericho agrees with that. He rips the boring, mediocre sports entertainers in the back. And the fans now have a man that can entertain them and is good enough to make them chant his name. The Y2J problem has officially arrived. He trashes the front office and all the amateurs in the back. WWF will never be the same again. And then The Rock finally speaks. He tells Jericho to shut his mouth. The fans are pretty much behind The Rock at this point. Rock calls him a jabroni and does the It Doesn't Matter shtick to him. Rock has the KY jelly plan. It involves a lube boot and Jericho's ass. Rock wraps it up, and Jericho pouts like a bitch. Epic debut. Years later, in his second book, though, Jericho ripped it to shreds. He says that he felt he looked like a loser, pouting and looking like he was going to cry. And I think he even talked to Vince and some other people backstage about that, about how he sold it incorrectly, you know, by having that reaction. And also he said he got a lot of heat by the way he spoke of everyone ripping. He says how stupid it basically looks now, going out there and shitting all over the show and the product and crapping all over the, you know, all the different guys. A lot of people kind of took that personally and took it seriously and were not happy with Jericho, A, coming in, getting a major push and being positioned this way, and B, basically talking down to all of them and burying everyone. Rock wraps things up. And like we said, Jericho pouts. Regardless, I thought Jericho looked like a big-time player going face-to-face with The Rock after a rock star entrance. And then we go backstage. We see Hardcore Holly searching for the big show. So what did you think of Jericho's debut?
It was tremendous. And for those that didn't like it backstage, tough shit. This mid-card needs to be upgraded. And if it means cherry-picking all the talent that's in WCW, then that's what you do. Those that are pissed off were the ones that were losing their spot because a guy that with more talent came in. Sorry, I'm not buying it.
You don't think it made everyone look kind of weak, though, him burying them?
That was his point. That was the point, was burying them. Not burying them, but...
Yeah, but then who's he beating if he thinks everyone's a boring, bland loser? Is that the old theory that your opponent's only as strong as you make
him also, ultimate? Well, you can also argue that he got stuck having to do that coming in and interrupting Rock. Maybe he should have interrupted a heel, and things would have been different.
Well, they wanted him to be a heel, though.
Well, then he had to do what he had to do. I don't have a problem with it.
Look, Scott, if Chris Jericho is telling me that he didn't think it was the great promo and he's given his reasons why, I'm gonna side with that over yours.
Well, then, okay. There you go. There's nothing left to say, then.
No, you can say it. I think he's being, with you.
I think he's being too much of a diplomat, to be honest with you.
What did you think of the pouting?
The pouting was awesome.
You like the pouting?
With his little mouth. But, you know, but then again, you're taking your one of your top guys is burying your brand new product.
See, The Rock, it was you bring situation. Up an interesting point, because The Rock was so great and so over on the mic, but God, his whole shtick was just burying guys. And then it's like, I guess maybe just let it go because it's The Rock. But when you look back at some of these things, I cringe almost a little bit.
Yeah. So I think you were damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I think Jericho's being too much of a diplomat, to be honest with you. I think he's just trying to be nice. But in reality, I thought the promo was great. I even know he mentions it in the book, too. But I thought it was fine. He was a heel. He had the right. If it was Undertaker or Big Show or Billy Gunn or, you know, somebody like that in the ring, that's different. You can address the promo differently. But I think it's a combination of people were jealous and that, you know, they too bad. A new, fresh guy was coming in to really... you know, kick dirt in WCW's face. The guy was an exceptional wrestler. That is documented. And guys were pissed off at that. Well, tough shit. Work harder. But as for whether he buried the product, well, you put him in with Rock. What the hell was he supposed to do? Be giddy with him? That wasn't how Rock was. See, this is where the Attitude Era paints itself into a corner. Because what do? Do you change Rock's personality and make him happy? No, he's got to bury him too. Rock was burying everybody. It didn't matter who. The fans were just digging it.
No, I mean, it was done tongue-in-cheek. I get it. It was obviously done because he was supposed to be stupid and over the top, but
right.
It's just a curious route to go. To me, it's almost like if you're going to have Jericho... I mean, him interrupting The Rock made him look like a major star, but to me, if you're going to cut that kind of promo against the whole company, why have him interrupt The Rock? Why not just have him come out and cut the promo? If he's not going to direct his attack, he barely even addresses The Rock, honestly. He barely even talks to him. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have him come out and interrupt The Rock, wouldn't you think it would be better to have him...
So you just have the arena quiet, and then all of a sudden the countdown just comes up?
Yeah, he comes out and rips the promotion. I mean, if you're going to
do that too.
And then you don't bury Jericho, you don't make him fucking pout like an idiot, and you avoid him just kind of... I mean, look, I'm not going to... question it too much. It obviously worked well, and the follow-up is leaves a little bit to be desired, as we'll see, but in the moment, he definitely came across like a major star. I will not deny that. Mm-hmm. I thought the music was great, the look was great, the atmosphere, they picked the perfect arena on the perfect night to do it in.
Yep.
It really paid off waiting. He had to wait for his contract to run up, and then they still held him off, and all the rumors were swirling. I don't know if you remember that one where even Jericho was, the rumor was that they weren't going to be able to use the Chris Jericho name that was trademarked by WCW, so he's going to have to use a new name. And one of the rumors that even Jericho was starting, he was like throwing random shit out there to fuck with people, and he said he was going to be Chris Whippleman, Harvey Whippleman's son. And,
yes, I remember
people
that.
Actually
yes.
ran with it.
Yeah, I remember that. That would have been funny. My dad, Bruno. That would have been pretty funny, actually. But, I he had to be done with the layout that was given to him. Could have done it without Rock, could have done it with another guy, could have done it with a heel and had him be a face. I don't know. You know, I mean, people could get upset that he, had a really hot open for a guy who was brand new, but at the same time, he ended up getting buried by one of the main eventers. So there's a lot of stuff you could talk about that, but again, all in all, I think it goes down as maybe one of the, if not one of the, if not the greatest debut ever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, we're obviously just nitpicking and talking about it for argument's sake, but I do right. think there's a little bit of validity to it.
I think there is too.
Okay. So we take a break, head to our next match. Big Boss Man takes on the Road Dogg. This is non-title, but still under hardcore rules. Boss Man hits the ring. Dogg says he's going old school. They brawl on the floor. Dogg wins that battle. He grabs a table, shoves it in the ring, as King tells us Boss Man will be defending his hardcore title against Al Snow at SummerSlam in a fully loaded rematch. Dogg sets up the table, grabs a chair, which gets stolen and used against him. Boss Man powerbombs Dogg through the table, but Snow comes out, bashes Boss Man with his dog Pepper's carrying case. Dogg covers and gets the quick win. Apparently Pepper was actually in the case, which is odd.
Yes.
We then see Big Show Rock walking backstage, and then we take a break. Mm-hmm. So Pepper was Al Snow's dog that he came upon a couple weeks before this show. He just happened to run into this dog backstage, and he heard it talking to him. So this becomes the next in the line of Al Snow's talking friends. We had Head, we have had Pierre, the Darehead, and now we have Pepper the dog. So
yes, very weird.
In one scene, him and Pepper were trying to flush Head down the toilet.
Yes.
Kill it.
Yes. That's right.
All right, next up, we have a pretty big-time match. Rock and Big Show. Rock's out first, followed by Show. Rock goes right at him, peppering him with right hands, running from buckle to buckle. Rock gets a side Russian leg sweep for the near fall. Show catches Rock with a flying forearm as Rock charged at him. He follows with some clubs and a headbutt. Show controls for another minute or so, and then cuts off the Rock comeback with a big boot. He locks Rock into a bear hug, and Rock slips free. He hits the ropes, but Show catches him with a sidewalk slam for a near fall. But now Big Shot makes his way to the ring. Of course, that's Hardcore Holly. He hops up on the apron. Show tells him to get away and headbutts him to the floor. Rock lands a low blow, drops Show with a DDT, sets up for the people's elbow, followed to a big pop. But Jericho shows back up, which I think a lot of people forget. They always think Jericho just had that one promo and then he left.
That's right. Yep.
He shows back up here, distracts the Rock. Rock goes to get his face, but Mr. Ass jumps the Rock from behind, takes him out with a jackhammer. The theme from Mr. Ass plays as gun takes off. Rock tries to scrape himself up, and then we see China walking backstage as we take our final break.
Yes.
Thoughts on that? Anything?
I'm glad that Billy Gunn was able to get one over on Rock.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like it for a while in that build. But do you think... Well, I won't get into that question now. We'll save that for SummerSlam. About Billy Gunn and Rock in general and that match and that feud. But we'll get more into that.
Right. But I do agree that we needed to see Billy Gunn get some heat here. And
get some heat here. He needed to, yeah. But we'll get more into the feud itself when we get to the Target Center.
You think it's odd that Holly's still messing with Show, even though he's with Taker?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think it seems random?
Yeah.
I mean, you have, like, Show has kind of been re-elevated to a major storyline guy, and you got Hardcore Holly still calling him out and getting in his face.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, he probably didn't belong anymore. Now that he's with Taker, he, you know, Holly needs to move on. Yeah, it was getting a little silly at that point. Yeah, I agree. I think it was getting silly at that point. We needed to give Big Show a legit focus right now instead of just dawdling around with this other middling shit. It was time to get, you know, if you're going to be with Taker, you got to be taken seriously and you need to focus on that. And he probably doesn't belong. I think it's time for him to move on to something else.
I mean, they did a good job establishing him.
Mm-hmm.
And as we'll see at SummerSlam, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
The week after the show would finally change directions a little bit. So.
Yes. Yep, absolutely.
All right, we take our final break, and we head back at a replay of the last segment, and then we head to the ring for our main event.
Mm-hmm.
Out comes China, and then out comes Shawn Michaels, as they needed a break in between the My Time theme, which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
The rare second appearance. Bust out the alternate theme.
Yes. Big moment. Big moment here tonight.
Indeed. So
he had his number one shot here, and now he had to stick, you know, his boy Sean gave him the business, and now it's on the line in this match.
You were out for revenge. Surprised you didn't have a passion crime, heat of the moment assassination of Shawn Michaels. Before, of course, even China came out, Jesse came out, joined in on commentary, which was a nice treat. Mm-hmm. So then, as I said, China came out, Shawn Michaels came out, and Jesse just sounded so fucking natural. Right back in, like awesome. Riding the bike for him. Yep. And then Triple H came out, and then finally Undertaker. Jesse said he doesn't care who wins, he just wants to do his job at SummerSlam, wants to referee the match for the championship of the world. Jesse knows that.
I like when Jesse no-sold Jerry when he goes, "You're going to wear Shawn Michaels bike shorts?" Or Shawn Michaels off, and he goes, "No, I'm going to wear legit WWF gear."
Yes.
He's like so no-sold it.
It was so good. Jesse notes that China has bigger arms than Jerry Lawler, which I thought was probably true. Hunter's out next, followed by Undertaker. Jesse says he will not be intimidated. He also says there are no facts to prove Hunter's the one that took out Austin. He says Austin's known to guzzle beer, and he could have tripped and fell down the stairs.
That was funny. I like how he called JR Jim.
Yeah.
Jim?
Well, I was like, he's back in WCW again.
Of course, JR had to no-sell that when he's like, "Jim, you and I worked well together. Remember that match in Nashville?" And JR can't say anything. That's very funny.
Taker goes right at Hunter. China sits back and watches. That short-lived as Taker hoists China up with a choke and then slugs her over the top to the floor. He really fucking cracked her over the top rope.
Yeah, she got smacked.
Jesse says she has to take her lumps if she wants to be in there with the big boys. Reminded me of WrestleMania 6 with the mixed tag.
Yes.
With him bitching about Sapphire. Taker
is no Sapphire.
No.
Or I should say Sapphire is no China.
Taker clotheslines Hunter to the floor. Jesse doesn't think anything will stop Austin from showing up at SummerSlam. Just the legitimacy he has of this is amazing. Brawl continues on the floor as Hunter shoves Taker into the post. He hits a face breaker on the floor for two. Jesse says he takes the referee job serious due to the stakes. And as you said, he's been training and will be decked out in the official WWF ring gear for it. Taker catches Hunter in a choke as he comes off the top, but China hits Taker with a low blow before he can connect on the choke slam. Hunter and China work over Taker, and Jesse vows China will not be an issue if Hunter is the challenger, which I thought was funny. He kind of slipped, and then Law was like, "Well, if Hunter wins, you mean?" And Jesse's like, "Oh, yeah, I guess you're right, King." He's even great at covering for himself
with
the fuck-ups. He still makes it believable.
"I guess you're right."
China shoves down Hunter and then cracks him with a low blow. She turns and walks into the choke slam. Hunter's back up, drops Taker with a knee. Hunter covers China but only gets a two count. Taker's back up now, and he and Hunter trade blows as Jesse continues to make the title more prestigious than it's ever been since, 96 maybe? Just adding so much validity to it. Taker elbows Hunter down for two as Jesse talks about his match with Lawler back in Memphis that involved the San Diego Chicken. Taker's dropping blows drop blows on Hunter as China's regrouping. We suddenly cut backstage and see Austin has now returned. He grabs a chair, walks off. Back in the ring, Taker knocks out Hunter to the floor next to China. Taker heads out at the same time. Austin marches to the ring with a chair. He bashes Hunter with the head, drapes China on top. Shawn counts three, and we have a brand new number one contender for SummerSlam, China. Taker's pissed. The fans are shocked. Austin celebrates, and we quickly fade to end the show. Scott, one beef I had with this, I know it's false count anywhere and anything goes. Do you think they should have done this in the ring, though? I feel like a lot of fans missed what happened on the floor.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think they because it was over at a part of the ring where nobody was really looking.
Yeah.
So
I don't think anyone expected that to happen, and it's almost like there's no pop for it.
Yeah, that was definitely something weird. There was definitely something weird there. But again, Jesse, everybody says, "Here comes Austin. Here comes Austin." What's Jesse say? "It's the world heavyweight champion."
Yeah. Yep.
Guys, can't you just listen to him? God. That was the first time, a long time, that Austin seemed superhuman.
Right.
In just that moment, just because of Jesse.
Yep. No, Jesse was awesome here. He added a lot to this angle and a lot to this match. So. That's it. So now, as of this show, our main event for SummerSlam is Steve Austin versus China. Now, I think even the most markiest of marks knew that wasn't going to happen. So we will chronicle that later this week at SummerSlam. So, Scott, what are your overall thoughts on this show?
It's awesome. Again, I think it is one of the iconic Raws of this era. Certainly one of the best Raws of the year. There are some other ones that were pretty good, too. But fucking up the whole main event of SummerSlam at this point really bugged me. And this is not a knock on China by any stretch. We'll get more into this again.
I mean, clearly done just for Swerve train wreck TV, right?
Yeah. But you can't do that. Well, you could, I guess. You got to try and avoid doing that with main events, though.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're trying to headline a show and you're trying to sell a pay-per-view. This is where they start to get a little arrogant in the sense that, oh, everyone's going to show up anyway. So we'll fuck around and we'll give them something. Don't worry about it. See, I don't like that. Not for a main event. I don't like that. Unless something legitimately happened, whether it's an injury or something of that nature. But we'll get more into that at SummerSlam. this show is iconic. Highly recommend finding it. We said we found it. It's there. Somebody posted on Daily Motion. You know, maybe you have it somewhere. Maybe you taped it. You know, it's a great show, top to bottom. It's not just the Jesse and the Jericho stuff. Excellent stuff with Kane and X-Pac. Excellent stuff with Show and Taker.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was on.
Yeah,
it
very
was
focused.
It was a big show.
And you could tell they were really feeling the crowd. They really were locked in 2 weeks. And SummerSlam had a lot of hype to it.
Yep.
A lot of hype. And not a ton of matches really specifically discussed on the show, but I think most of the card was either set or assumed. But having Jesse here and Jesse ready for SummerSlam and looking, you know, coming off a weird WrestleMania, I feel like the storylines and characters were, outside of Vince and Austin, I feel like a lot of the characters were in better shape here heading into SummerSlam. Like, things are more defined outside of this whole stupid
crap. Yeah, I agree with that.
Crap.
Yeah, things are more defined.
Like, we know more where everyone lies.
Yeah. I still think the main event was just... I still think they shouldn't have messed around with the main event.
No, again, probably not. I mean, it's not even like they did it with, like, 4 weeks to go. Like, they didn't really need to shoehorn these 2 weeks with these... And as we'll see, the next week was even fucking more crazy and volatile.
Yes.
Even more over the top. We'll talk about it Wednesday. A great episode of Raw. One of the best of all time. Definitely highly recommended. I'm sure most of our listeners would have seen this one. But if you haven't, check it out. A lot of fun. Just at the absolute peak when it comes to Raw.
Yes.
And television.
I don't think there's any doubt. Yep.
So as we mentioned a few times tonight, Wednesday night we'll be back with SummerSlam 99. So we'll kind of wrap coming off of this, and then we'll be moving along. So let me pull up the schedule here, Scott, see what we got scheduled for the next couple of weeks. So Wednesday
before we do that, though, do you want to hear what was going on the other channel?
Oh, yes.
The other channel. On TNT, we had WCW Monday Nitro live from the Idaho Center in Boise, Idaho. And just perusing this, JR, this Nitro actually is not that bad. Vampiro and the Insane Clown Posse defeated Norman Smiley, Prince Iaukea, and Lash LaRue. Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham defeated Public Enemy. Mona pinned Little Genie with a modified surfboard into a roll-up at 4:36 after the bout. Of course, this is courtesy of our good friend Graham Cawthon of thehistoryofwwe.com. After the bout, Brandi Alexander attempted to attack Mona, but she quickly sent Alexander to the floor. Chris Benoit defeated WCW U.S. champion David Flair with Torrey Wilson and Asia to win the title with the diving headbutt at 4:01. Prior to the match, referee Nick Patrick came out and said referee Charles Robinson, who came out to officiate the bout backstage. During the early moments of the contest, Flair attempted to get himself counted out, only for Shane Douglas, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn to come out and throw him back into the ring. Douglas, Malenko, and Saturn remained ringside for the rest of the match. During the closing of the match, WCW Tag Team Champion Chris Kanyon ran out, but was blocked in the aisle by Douglas, Malenko, and Saturn, with WCW Tag Team Champion Diamond Dallas Page then attacking Benoit in the ring until he was chased off. After the contest, the Revolution celebrated in the ring as Page and Kanyon watched from the aisle. Benoit then took the mic and challenged Page to a no DQ match at Road Wild for the U.S. title. Flair didn't land one offensive move in the bout. Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio Jr. defeated Dave Taylor and Chris Adams. Billy Kidman defeated Disco Inferno by DQ. Buff Bagwell defeated Scott Norton by DQ. Kanyon defeated Booker T. And here's the big hook, JR. WCW World Champion Hulk Hogan, Bill Goldberg, and Sting defeated Kevin Nash, Sid Vicious, and WCW TV Champion Rick Steiner at 8:08. When referee Scott Dickinson ran out, took over officiating duties after the initial referee was knocked out, and stopped the match as Sting had Nash in the Scorpion Deathlock, moments after Hogan hit Sid and Nash with a steel chair. But the big thing, JR, Hogan's return to the red and yellow, and the return of the American Made theme music after 3 years. There's your main event, and that is your Nitro from that same night, August 9th, 1999, from the Idaho Center in Boise, Idaho.
I remember that moment being pretty good. He got a big pop when he came back as the real American, but I know you said it looked like a solid episode, but not many Nitros in 99 when you had a slide through them are that good. I mean, the match listing may read okay, but not often, especially during this dead period when Bischoff was pretty much 1 foot out the door and there were a lot of flux here in August. Yeah. So, the Hogan return definitely 1 week worth of great nostalgia anyway.
What did you think of the American Made theme?
I hated it, especially back in like 94 when he first debuted it. I thought it was such a blatant ripoff. I mean, if you listen to that Real American, the lyrics are pretty much the same, like only reversed. It was so obvious that they just cloned Real American and flipped the words around so they could avoid the copyright issues. But I never, it was okay. I mean, as a standalone song, it's fine, but I remember really hating it when they first debuted it.
Mm-hmm. The other night, Dr. G and I threw in one of our 24/7 tapes and just to see what was on. Totally blind, and it was Super Brawl 7 from February of 1996, which is an unbelievably ghastly pay per view. And I think it was one of his last.
Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
Was the Flair Savage on that? Wasn't that bad?
Yep, that was okay.
They were in the cage, right?
Yeah. It was Flair Savage, which wasn't bad. That was when Elizabeth turned on him and started that god-awful stealing his money storyline.
You're crazy. That was a great storyline.
Huh?
That was a great storyline.
Well, it was a good storyline when it started.
They drew well the houses with that thing, too.
It got really tired after a while, and I think the NWO saved it.
Meh. You got tired.
But but those two matches were good. You know, it wasn't a bad match. DDP and Johnny B. Badd.
Yeah, they had good chemistry.
Which Johnny B. Badd actually won, and then 6 weeks later, he's at WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, he lost to Luger on Saturday Night, and then he left. Yeah. But
and then that tag thing was a mess. Luger and Sting fought twice.
That awful.
That was a big show.
Is that when they fought Harlem Heat, or is that uncensored? That's uncensored when Sting.
They fought Harlem Heat, and then they fought the Road Warriors. Because Road Warriors defeated somebody on the main event, and then Luger and Sting had to win for the Road Warriors to get a tag title shot, so they actually helped Luger and Sting win. It was really weird. It was a whole... And that was the infamous... But the biggest moment of that night was the infamous, "I respect you, Booker man."
Right.
That was that night, when your boy Pillman said, "Adios, go fuck yourself," to WCW. Lunatic. Loose cannon. That was said twice that night.
Well, there you go. There's your Nitro. What? Let me see. I'll see if you had the ratings handy, but I can look here really quick. Hang on a sec.
I'm sure.
I said hold on.
I will predict. Well, I'm going to predict while you're waiting. Okay. While I'm waiting.
It is the quarterly. Hang on one sec. Go ahead.
I will say Raw did a... I'll say 6-1. And Nitro did a 3-2.
Amazing to think that's, you know, bad for Nitro.
I know. Now WWF would kill for a 3-2 on Raw.
All right, 8-9, 99. Let's see. All right, what was your prediction again?
I said Raw got a 6-1 and Nitro got a 3-2.
Very close. Raw got a 6-4, Nitro got a 3-1.
Wow.
Good job.
So I understated that Raw. Wow. Okay. I was being a little more diplomatic about it. Wow.
The next week Raw would bump to a 6-6. And then dip a little bit, and then 927, a 6-8.
927. Well, you know what that is.
Yes.
That's the, we'll talk about that. We know, everyone knows what Raw that is.
And that's our highest for a little bit, till they get into the sevens a little bit in 2000. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right, so there is your Raw 8999. Like we said, this Wednesday we'll be doing SummerSlam 99. Next Monday, Unforgiven 99.
Mm-hmm.
And the next Wednesday, you got a couple things in the hopper. We're looking at least part of that episode, if not the whole thing. We're going to have Brad Woodling and Chad Campbell on. We're going to bullshit a little bit about wrestling, current state, and also talk to you guys about the major announcement we referenced last week, the launching of the Place to Be Nation website. Will be all of our websites. We'll announce the URL shortly and all that good stuff. As we said, it'll be an overall pop culture website. We've put a great staff together. We're going to be talking wrestling, sports, music, movies, TV, life in general, and we'll have daily updates, and we're going to have mailbags and emails and everything else for you.
Yep.
It's going to be the home of our podcast, as well as where the Big Boys Play podcast with Chad and Parv, and then we're going to create some additional podcasts, and also proud to announce the addition of Grant Owens' We Found New Music podcast will be housed there as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of cool stuff popping with that. We'll talk about it more next Wednesday. Stay tuned this weekend, though, because we'll be launching the new Facebook page. And then the site itself is tentatively set to launch your birthday, June 1st. Big 4-0 coming up for you.
Very exciting,
yeah. Little prick.
You'll get there.
And then the week after that, Scott, more excitement. We'll be recording our trivia matchups.
Yes. So, you guys already know the matchups?
Yes.
Can't wait to get it started.
So that week of June 3rd, there'll only be one show. We're going to kind of balance out doing three last week. So the week of June 3rd, just one show, because we're going to be recording trivia during that week. So it's going to be a lot to handle. So there's your next few weeks here on the Place to Be podcast. Anything else you want to talk about, Scott, before we wrap?
No. I hope everyone enjoyed it. It was a nice little kind of a quickie episode, you know, like express episode for those quick lunches. But I hope you enjoyed it. And looking forward to heading to the Target Center in 2 days.
Yeah. Anything? Want to talk about Extreme Rules at all? Got a few minutes.
I thought it was. I guess it's just like any other WWE pay per view right now. It had its ups. It had its downs. There was some sloppy moments. I told you Jericho was going to win.
Yes, you did.
Was it true? Did we? Was it the right thing to do? No, but that's not what we were talking about. We're just making straight predictions. But it wasn't. You know, I don't know. We'll see if time. I don't think it's going to matter. I think Fandango.
The one that really befuddled me was Sheamus defeating Mark Henry.
And boy, did that ending suck or what?
The whole match was a mess, and then the ending was terrible.
Was terrible.
It totally ruins Henry beating fucking Ryback at WrestleMania.
Yeah, but the end was so bad. You had the three. He hits the third light, and then they stare at each other. And then he broke kicks him and hits the fourth. It was like, I don't know what the fuck happened. They look like they forgot what the hell they were doing. It was awful. And then Orton and Big Show was like watching grass grow. I did not like that match at all. Loved Ambrose Kofi, even though Kofi blew a spot or two in that match too. Good news, good for the Shield. Believe it or not, I was not upset with the end of Cena Ryback.
No, I definitely wasn't. And anyone bitching about it, it just hasn't been paying attention to wrestling, like, ever. Like, it was the most obvious thing coming, and I'm a little pissed, actually, we didn't talk about it in our predictions, but it was obviously going... I wasn't shocked one bit when they did that finish, because they have another pay-per-view coming, they clearly want to keep the feud going, you can't beat Ryback, and they weren't ready to take the title. Cena just won it 6 weeks ago by beating The Rock, and you're not going to lose it right away. So, I was not surprised. I still think Ryback is going to end up with the title.
Mm-hmm.
I think Payback being in Chicago, we could definitely see maybe the return of CM Punk in that match interferes and cost Cena the title, and then they feud without the title on the line for a little bit. I don't see how you could end this without giving it to Ryback at some point, or else you're really just going to kill anything, any momentum he has, any aura or any kind of streak he has going.
I think there'll be a run in that night, but it will not be Punk.
Okay.
It will be Paul's other guy.
Well, let's see how that goes. We have an hour left on Raw because he has revealed a new member.
Oh, yes.
But it's not...
I don't know who it is. I know somebody mentioned to me through text, but I didn't... I said, don't tell me.
Okay. Well, it's not somebody who you would think would be in the main event mix.
Okay.
But I'm thinking it's a red herring because that person is set to fight Triple H later tonight. I'm guessing the real Paul Heyman guy. And this guy may still be part of the stable too, but I'm guessing the real Paul Heyman guy shows up in that match. Now, have you seen the rumors that are out there?
I have not.
Oh, they're going to be dated, so I guess there's probably no point talking about them. But okay. Let's just say he's a... I won't even give it away. It's not going to matter. This is going to end after.
The cage match was...
You think it was the best of the three?
Adequate, no. Adequate, if underwhelming. It was all right. Not as violent as it should have been. And now here's where the whole blood thing is starting to bother me now. Nobody can blame Linda anymore.
Yeah.
That needed to be more violent.
Yeah.
I still think the best match of the three was SummerSlam.
You think this was better than Mania? I gotta watch Mania again.
I gotta watch Mania again, too. A little. But again, I think you and I have to watch Mania as TV viewers.
Well, it was the right finish, though. I mean, he beat him as clean as he can get, pretty much.
Yeah, he did. Speaking of clean finishes, very smart to do it with the Shield.
Oh yeah, that was
no shenanigans.
Had to. Yep, no bullshit. You could not. Yeah, you cannot have them cheat or screw anyone to win. You needed them to go over as clean as a sheet, and they did. It really legitimized all three of them, and now they look great here on Raw with all the gold. And it was the next step. You know, we talked about how they just had to get through WrestleMania, and then they could kind of really focus back in on them, launching them even further. And this is the next step in that quest.
I agree. No, it was good. But my honest opinion, I'm just glad it's over and we can start talking about other matches. I feel like we've been talking about this pay-per-view for like 3 years.
Yeah, no, I know.
Glad to finally be over. We can talk about something else.
It's funny, I contemplated ordering it, and then I was just like, I'm going to hate myself if I spend money on this.
Yeah, so. You're glad you didn't. Payback, of course, coming up Father's Day.
Is it really? It's on Father's Day?
Sunday, June 16th from the Allstate Arena, ironically, in Chicago.
Coincidentally,
whatever. Non sequiturly.
And that'll be our next headlines show. Be right before that one.
Yes.
All right. So, all right. Well, there's your Extreme Rules thoughts. We'll catch more up on the current stuff next Wednesday night. when we'll do a little kind of headlines potpourri, a little bit, not a full headlines and all that shit. Right. But we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the build to pay. So, all right, Scott, let's wrap things up. Hope you guys enjoyed this show. We'll be back Wednesday night from the Target Center with the Governor in tow for SummerSlam 1999. Until then, that's Scott. I'm Justin, and Gronk is at the plate. Very excited to see what he does.
With one forearm?
With one headlight. But the wallflower?
Yes, very good.
Very good. That was my heyday.
Yeah, but that wasn't really your wheelhouse of music.
Sure it was.
I can't see you listening to Wallflowers. I can see you listening to, you know.
I listen to all, like, late 90s alternative.
And all that, but I just, no. I can't see you as a Wallflowers guy. Incubus.
Hip-hop and alternative. That's what I pretty much listen to.
Incubus.
No, see, that was more than alternative. Incubus was more towards a little bit further. I'm talking, like, Hootie.
Hootie. There you go.
The Hootie fan.
You know where we can talk
Counting
about
Counting Crows.
I just can't see you listening to Counting Crows.
Why not?
I'm impressed you did, but
I you
just,
listen
I
to these podcasts? Like, half the music is either late 90s alternative or rap. I mean, that's...
Yeah, well, I know, but I thought you were just doing it to humor me. I didn't realize it was you.
No, I don't really give a fuck whether you like it or not. I don't give a shit.
Judy Martin wants some Guy Lombardo.
Who the fuck is Guy Lombardo? I didn't peg you as a Lombardo guy. I mean, I knew you liked Ella Fitzgerald.
I was going to say Lawrence Welk.
You were on that show once, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Performed the theme to the game before it even was made?
Yep. I blew the bubbles.
Yes. And so did Judy, but from a different orifice. All right, we're out of here, folks. I was trying to hope maybe Gronk would do something crazy while we filibuster here.
This is like the longest ending ever.
It's a 3-1 count. Let's see what he does in this pitch, and we'll wrap. And he... It was worth the wait, Scotty C! Ties the game! 4-4.
There we go. One
worth
forearm.
It was worth it. One headlight.
Yes. Lawrence Welk.
We can drive it home. Judy's sagging headlights. Man, I ain't changed, but